Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back here on Podcast Friday, my favorite day of the week. And today is extra special because one of my most favorite people in the world is joining me, returning to the podcast as guest host, the amazing Joshua Siegel. Josh, thanks for joining me.
Well, Robin Bailey, first and foremost, I'm glad this is audio and not visual so the world doesn't see me blushing as you shower me with compliments. But no place I would rather be on a Friday morning than with you, and especially this Friday morning, because we are joined by literally one of the nicest, kindest human beings on the planet. So I'll let you introduce him, but I'm stoked for this conversation.
Yeah, and I'll make you blush a little bit more, Josh. We were chatting at the top of this before we hit record. You know, one of the nicest surprises is the friendships that I got to build through this podcast. And Josh, I have to give you a shout out. You are one of the best connectors I've ever met. And, you know, when I hop on a call with today's guest a couple of weeks ago, it was amazing just to leverage the relationship that you've built with him. And it was immediately like, yes, we are recording together because this is a great person. So with no further ado, on the pod today is Drew Lindsay, who is the co-founder of GuruLink. He is a talent strategist, investor, a startup mentor, a tech and gadget enthusiast, a global wanderer, speaking to my heart there, and the father of twins. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Robin. Glad to be here. And thank you, Josh, for making the connection. I would agree with what Robin said. You are a master connector for sure. And I feel like, I know certainly when I met you, I felt immediately bonded to you in a very strong way. But I feel like that's probably not unusual for you.
Yeah, that's par for the course for Josh. But I want to dive right into it. Can you tell us a little bit about GuruLink? Just for anyone who might not have heard of it yet, I think we should dive there first.
Sure. GuruLink, we're a talent partner to startups and scale-ups. We have an office in Toronto, Montreal, Calgary, Vancouver. We work closely with founders and business leaders of mostly early stage. Our sweet spot is sort of seed to about Series D. Once companies get to about 500 and beyond, we still work with those kind of companies, usually because we started working with them early. But really the reason that we started working with early stage startups is the impact. We actually started working with enterprises early on. We were working with Deloitte and Accenture and RBC and TD and Rogers and Ellison, those kinds of companies. And found that over a few years to be a wee bit soul-sucking. It's hard to feel like you're having an impact in any way with companies of that scale. And so we started leaning super heavily into the startups and scale-up space. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 15 plus years. It's probably about 90% of what we do, and impact being a big, big reason for that for sure. And then through that, I've also done a decent amount of angel investing. We've done just shy of 30 direct investments, 4 funds and 2 studios. And that was sort of rooted in this awareness, I guess, of incentive structures and the behaviors that they drive. And I always kind of thought it was a little, especially with early stage startups, talent can have such a massive, massive impact on the organization, good or bad. And so perhaps our incentives should be tied to something greater than a candidate staying for 3 months or 6 months and an actual outcome of the organization, which creates a mutually beneficial upside. And so we started doing some investment about 12 years ago or so. And ironically, and Josh and I, obviously, we met totally separately from this, but ironically, the first investment that we did was Wave. And so that worked out reasonably well, thankfully. And we've been pretty fortunate and pretty lucky in that. But yeah, that's the kind of general backstory, I guess, on us. And I've done quite a bit. I do a lot of mentoring. Startups are definitely a huge passion point for me and part of what has been able to keep it interesting, I think, for 20 plus years, something new all the time. And so I've been mentoring companies as well for over a decade and really get a great energy out of doing that as well. So that's a passion point for me too.
Drew, that's very interesting. And certainly I think there's future conversations to be had around that, because now I'm even more intrigued about some of the companies that you've helped grow.
Yesterday, I was up to lunch with a person that joined us about a year ago, and she came from outside our industry. And one of the things I had said to her was, I think what we do in the employee benefit space is one of the best kept secrets in insurance. And I've been doing this since 1996. And I still do the old yes, you know, when I close a sale, it's still the place that I want to be. And you've been a staple in your space, in the talent space, for over two decades. Can you talk to us about why you ended up there in the beginning and what's kept you there?
Well, I think, you know, like most people who wind up in recruiting, particularly agency recruiting, it's a lifelong dream that you grow up thinking about since childhood. That's certainly what got me into it. And what's kept me in it is I'm a glutton for punishment. I'm kidding on both of those, actually. I think in truth, there's very, very few people in our industry who grew up thinking about this even as a career option. And so I was no different. I grew up in a family business, an entrepreneurial family, which I worked around from a young age. And so I always had an inkling that I might like to own my own business. I saw that my parents had a lot of freedom that you just generally weren't afforded an employment type situation. They'd go to Mexico every year for 6 weeks. They'd go to the cottage for like 4 weeks in the summer. And they just had a great control over their time. And the outputs are reflected by the inputs in a way that employment opportunities aren't always, particularly in larger organizations. It can become a little bit political and not so meritocratic. And I always kind of thought it should be less about optics and bullshit and kissing the right asses and more about what you actually deliver. And I wanted my outputs to be based on that. And while I can play the political game, it feels disingenuous to me and I don't like being disingenuous. So I actually had some thoughts of taking over the family business because they had a great business. They had a great life. And so they had an accounting firm with about 50 people. And you're not able to incorporate an accounting firm, or at least you weren't historically. And so what my stepdad did was he incorporated an organization called CA4IT. And it was a marketing and back office services company that had 8 offices across Canada that were under them. So they would provide the marketing top of funnel, pass them leads, do their back office, and they would get royalties for that. And so we were coming home from a conference from Chateau Montebello in Quebec. And we got in an argument entirely unrelated to work, and he fired me. Like any good entrepreneur, you get fired at some point, right? By your family, no less. And so I didn't set my alarm and I didn't go to work the next day. And my direct boss called me at the time and said, hey, where are you? And I said, George fired me last night. And he said, you know, he doesn't mean it. And I said, you know what? I know he doesn't mean it, but I'm also not living the rest of my life under somebody's thumb who decides at any given moment when they're not happy with the way I'm looking at them or talking to them that I no longer have a job. That does not seem like a stable future that I'm comfortable with. So if I'm not fired, I quit. And he said, you know, please, please come back. We need you. At the time we were going through the ISO certification process, they were the first Canadian accounting firm to be ISO certified. And I was documenting the process and taking them through that certification process. So I said, tell you what, I'll come back and take you across the finish line for the certification process. Also, I'm going to Mexico in January for 2 weeks, and I'm going to Mardi Gras in February for a week, and no new job in their right mind is going to allow me to do that. So my last day at work will be the day before I go to Mardi Gras. And so that's what I did. And I left the day I went to Mardi Gras, went and had a great time in Mardi Gras, as you could probably imagine, and came back and started doing a bunch of sort of random contracting jobs through placement agencies, funny enough. So I kind of had the perspective of the candidate side of things and what that was like, and saw some of the good, the bad, and the ugly, and how maybe I might do it differently. And so it was helpful and great experience. I was a database publisher at eHarlequin. I'm a romantic. I was a property accountant at CIBC. I did a bunch of kind of random things. And recruiting had been a bit more in the back of my mind than some people, because my parents' business, what the company did was taxes for IT contractors. So a big source of referrals for them was placement agencies. And one of my stepdad's best friends is a gentleman named Frank McRae, who owns a company called Procom, which is one of the larger Canadian placement agencies. They do over $1 billion a year. So it was kind of around in my purview. And my stepdad had always tried to push us toward something in technology, believing that was the future, which I intuitively believed as well. And I was always kind of a math and sciences person and did fairly well in those without too much effort. But I just didn't see myself sitting in front of a computer and slugging code all day. As we've talked about before, you know, energy drivers for me are travel and people. And I just didn't see myself being purely in front of a computer. I wanted to do something with people. And so recruiting was kind of an interesting cross of those two things. It's a bit sales oriented, it's certainly people oriented. And the tech recruiting is obviously very much focused on tech. So there's an opportunity to learn and be around it and ride that wave still. And so I started exploring opportunities in that and ended up starting with a small recruiting company called CompuSource. There were about 12 people. And came in and got a little bit lucky, I guess. I mean, it was 1999. So like if you had a Java certification on your resume, like everyone thought the world was going to blow up. I'm dating myself a little bit, but hey, we started off and I'd done this 20 years ago. But you know, everyone thought the world was going to blow up at Y2K. I suspect we probably all on this call might remember that, which is hilarious in hindsight. And so literally it's like, if you had a Java certification on your resume, you're getting offers. It was even crazier than 2021 in some ways. Like people were getting offers before they got home. it was a kind of a crazy time. So, I mean, I got a little bit lucky, I guess, but I did 2 placements in my first month. And in my third month, I generated almost 70K in production. I made just shy of $50,000. And then in my third month doing recruiting, at the time, 20 plus years ago, my friends were making $35,000 a year. So I thought, you know, this is for me, I think. And I guess I've always been a little bit contrarian and always just kind of like curious and creative and trying to think of different ways to approach things. And so I was going to the founder saying, you know, I'm seeing these challenges where the team member doesn't have information on a client, they're on a call with a candidate, they're trying to get the other person's attention, they're on a phone call. It's just kind of disjointed. Like, we need better information sharing so there's smoother process. Like, I created databases before. I could create a custom database for us and just coming up with ideas about partnerships and different things like that. And his mentality was shut up and get on the phone, which I understand. I wasn't hired to be a business strategist. I was hired to be a recruiter, and that's not lost on me, but I was trying to be useful or add value or make it a better situation for everybody. And he was entirely disinterested in that. And the frustrating thing for me was, if I was not producing, I would totally understand that. But I was one of the top producers on a monthly basis. And I also walked into his office in the first month. I had a $1,400 a month draw. And so for those who might not know what a draw is, effectively, it's a prepayment of commissions. So I had a $350 a week draw, and I did about $20,000 production my first month. Being on the draw, I had a 10% difference in my commission. So I lost $2,000 in commission for the sake of a $1,400 draw. So I walked in his office in the first month and said, no more draw, please. I'm going to go full commission. So at the time, he's not paying me unless I produce. That's not lost on me. If I'm not working, I'm not fooling anybody but myself. So that was kind of, I just found that to be a bit demoralizing, truth be told. And so I just stopped making the suggestions. And then in about my fifth month, I interviewed somebody who now is my business partner. And he came into the organization and had a similar kind of drive and energy around different ideas and different approaches. And we'd go out for lunches and just talk about how we could try to excel in this and how we can try to be a bit different. And we just really, really connected on that. And then we just started ideating about what could we do differently. We had all these grand ideas about mobile for recruiting, which 20 years ago wasn't a thing, video interviews, partnering with VCs, all these things that we thought were a bit different, and decided, you know what, if somebody who's kind of got a little bit more of that old school approach, shall we say, to recruiting can build a business like this, I think we can do it too. So we decided to take a chance on that, and we incorporated in February 2002. We actually started building our software in October 2001, and yeah, incorporated in February 2002. I quit my job in January. He quit in, I think, May, and we really kind of got going around June of 2002. There was actually originally 3 of us. We exited one of the business partners about 15 years ago.
Been through that too.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's fun.
As those things go, we were pretty lucky. It was reasonably smooth because those things can get very, very ugly.
Yeah.
I've heard some horror stories, and I've had some other business partner stories, but yeah, we were fortunate that was pretty smooth. So that was kind of the genesis of it and how it came to be and how I got into recruitment. And you know, how am I still in it 20 years plus later? Maybe the glutton for punishment thing is partly true, even though I was half joking, because it is not for the faint of heart, particularly agency recruiting. We kind of joke like agency recruiting years are like 3 normal years. So I'm actually like 80. But I think what really has kept me in it is the fact that we lean really heavily into the startups and scale ups, and the fact that I get to sit with some incredible founders and some incredible business leaders and talk strategy. One of the things that was unappealing to me about enterprise was you were very much commoditized. There was no access to any business leaders. You played a bit of a game of broken telephone, and there was no real relationship there. And so I think that is what has kept me kind of interested in it. It's just, it's always something new. You're working with people who are trying to change the world at the risk of being a bit cheesy and just do really cool, innovative stuff. And I think you can play a really, really fundamentally important role, particularly in the early stages. But I think talent is important at all stages. But the impact that you can have with even 1 or 2 or 3 resources in an early stage can fundamentally change the trajectory and the outcome of a company. And to me, that's really exciting and really interesting. And I love leaning into that kind of situation. And I guess some of the pressure that comes with that and the excitement that comes with that has definitely been a big part of what's kept me in it.
I know Josh is going to jump in here because Josh asks phenomenal questions. And there's a reason why I keep having him back on the podcast, because he's so great at it and so much fun to hang around. But I want to go back to something you said earlier in your answer. You said you saw that part of the appeal of becoming an entrepreneur was watching your parents, and they had this freedom to go to Mexico and do all these types of things. And I would think as a young person, because I would have experienced the same thing, I saw what dad had, and he had the flexibility and he'd come to my soccer games. And I thought, wow, that's a pretty cool thing that he's doing. I guess my question is, what was some of the surprises that you saw? Okay, I saw all of this freedom, but I didn't expect this part along the way.
That's a great question. I guess some of the challenges maybe that come along with management, I was a little bit oblivious to. Truth be told, I was pretty fortunate, I guess, in terms of growing up with it. I always managed my own expectations. And what my stepdad was always say is, you know, 90% of businesses fail within 2 years. And I knew that it wasn't the type of thing that, while you had freedom and control over your time, that didn't mean I was working a 30-hour work week. It probably meant I was going to work a 50, 60-hour work week. But I would at least be able to control when I did it and when I didn't do it and things like that. That's what kind of really appealed to me about it. So, you know, most of the things weren't too surprising because I'd been so close to it. But I think some of the sort of management challenges and overhead that come along with that, I don't know if I was totally prepared for. And I think it's still something that I'm growing in and learning about. People are interesting and they're all different, of course. And it's not a one size fits all style of management. Some people do that, but I don't think that's an effective management style. So I think that's probably been one of the biggest surprises or challenges for me, truth be told, going through this, is sort of growing in that regard of really making sure that you're there in the right way for your people and managing those interpersonal dynamics and seeing the things that are coming down the pipe before they happen and getting out in front of them. And some of those kinds of things is I didn't really kind of realize all of the dynamics that were involved in that. And that at times could be a bit challenging and an area that I still feel like I definitely have room for growth in. Many other areas I have room for growth in, but that's certainly one that's top of mind.
Wow. You've given us like a million and one different threads to pull. I'll say first and foremost, you look phenomenal for an 80-year-old. So good job on whatever routine you're doing. I would love to spend a ton of time chatting about coming from an entrepreneurial family in New Orleans, because I share both of those with you. But I'm going to go more broadly, and I want to talk about the intersection of work and life. So reflecting on your background and your journey, you are a successful entrepreneur. You work in the world of recruiting. You work as an amazing business development human being, and you're working in the startup space. All of those by themselves are massively time intensive and stressful endeavors. Like, that could be a 100-hour week very easily. Yeah. That being said, I know you, and I know you have a multitude of other hats that are so incredibly important to you as a father, a husband, a friend, and you really pride yourself on living a life well balanced. So, what the heck's the secret here, Drew? How do you do it? How do you manage to seemingly do it all?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like I said, lots of room for improvement for sure. And balance, like, is an interesting concept to me, because I feel like balance in and of itself is like a whole bunch of micro imbalances balancing themselves out, if you know what I mean. Literally, like, physical balance as a human being, it's micro imbalances in some ways. And I feel like, you know, it's an interesting concept, and almost to some degree, true balance is like hard to find, I think, for most. And I feel like usually these things are in a little bit of a state of imbalance, and you just kind of, as the pendulum swings one way, you kind of have to be conscious about pulling it back and like manage your own energy. I feel like for me, that's been a big part of it, is the lifestyle design. We're socialized in North America in particular to, you go to a university, you get a job, you get married, you buy a house, you get the white picket fence, you have the kids, you work hard to send them through university, and then you get to retire and enjoy your life. And I think for the most part, that's how we're socialized in North America. And from a really young age, and maybe in part from the benefit that I had family businesses and saw something different around me, that's maybe the kind of, you know, nurture component of it, I think I had the benefit of. But that just seemed like a horrible existence to me in some ways. I mean, all of those things I wanted, but I was like, why kill yourself for 65 years? Like, I would see my parents going around traveling, and they had a great life too. But when they started really traveling the world and going to these more exotic places, they started doing that later in their life. And when you're doing that in your 60s or 70s, it's a very, very different thing. In terms of, you come home from one of these trips and you need a vacation from your vacation kind of thing. And so I thought, you know, I wanted to be able to enjoy these things all the way through. And for me, that kind of helped to keep a bit of the balance, because I do work 50, 60 hour weeks sometimes. I'll work till 3-4 in the morning sometimes. Is that balance? Probably not necessarily, but I feel like balance is more of a macro than a micro thing. Like, if you're looking to balance in like a short-term scenario and a micro scenario, it's really, really difficult. So I try to like think about it in a longer time horizon, if that makes sense. And so you kind of just like got to like feel your energy and recognize when you sort of need to disconnect and re-energize. And I've also found that I have the good fortune of being able to travel and having a lot of freedom. And we always had a mentality around you could work from anywhere. This wasn't like a COVID thing for us. We've been telling our team that for 20 plus years. I didn't care about optics. I cared about results, and I cared about accountability. I didn't care where you were. If you worked 4 hours a day and you did an awesome job, good for you. Maybe, especially in a commission-based job, you might want to think about working more because you could earn a lot more. But you know what? Hey, if that's your life and that makes you happy, then good for you. And if that's your balance, good for you. So I think For me, it's just been really intentional focus on lifestyle design and trying to stay connected to like my energy, I guess, and trying to really be conscious of when I need to re-energize and recenter a little bit and just disconnect and take a break. Because I find for me, I can go hard for a long period of time. I'm also able to operate pretty well on a small amount of sleep, which is probably not advisable, but I'm able to do it. But I think that for me has been the key to the balance and just making priorities for the things that are important in life. I don't really live life with regrets, but the things that I might regret is not experiencing things, not spending time with my children, not spending the right time with my wife, not being a good dad. So I just try to make sure that I make time and space for all of those, because when it comes down to it, as much as I'm driven, I'm motivated, and I want to be successful, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Like if your family's falling apart and you got a whole bunch of money, that's not the life that I want to live. And so I just try to be very conscious of putting in the time where I can, but also working hard. And I guess, you know, I've always had a bit of a work hard, play hard mentality. And so I think making sure that you make time for the play makes the working hard a lot easier and kind of strike a balance that way.
Drew, as someone who's gotten to know you pretty deeply over the past year, I can say watching you and the way you design your life is pretty inspirational. And I think we could fill probably 84 podcasts with some of the philosophies that you bring to that. I'd love to pull one more thread when it comes to work-life balance and that of being an entrepreneur. If people have been listening to your answers, you're dropping a lot of tidbits about how you think about your people and your care for them. And I'd love to know how you take your philosophies around work-life design and balance that with, you've got a whole bunch of employees that are working for you right now. How do you help them also live their best life? And I know you shared a few of the tidbits, but I'd love to chat about that a little bit more holistically.
Yeah, I mean, from the get-go, lifestyle design was important to me. And that's something I want to be able to afford to my team as well, because I just felt like that's how you live, for me, a fulfilled life. So I didn't want it to be that, you know, I, as the leader, could go and live this fulfilled and balanced and sort of designed life, and the rest of them had to sit there and grind on my behalf. That just didn't seem right at all. So that philosophically from the get-go, it was, I wanted everybody to think about their life like that. And what does the ideal life look like for you? Because I feel like for the most part, we as human beings are limited by our own belief systems and our own socialization. And if you can kind of get people into a little bit of a different mindset, you can fundamentally transform things. A lot of people think they can't do things because most people around them haven't, and they've been told that they can't. And in reality, very few things you can't do. It's mostly a choice. And so we've just tried to present that opportunity to people that they can too design their lives. And I try to, I guess, as much as I try to read my energy and when I need a break, I try as best as I can. I'm sure I could do a better job of reading that in my team. And this job can be highly, highly stressful. In recruiting agency world in particular, can be a highly stressful job, particularly when some people are heavily, their income is heavily predicated on commissions. And so it can be very, very stressful. And we've had times where we had a team member who was just not in a good place. And we said, listen, I think you need to take some time, take a few months, go travel, go do something. Your job's here. Your job is safe here. So I try to give them just a safe feeling that they can be open and honest and that we're here to support them in all different ways. And that to me, I think, is what we've really tried to instill. And one of, I think, the proudest things for me about the culture that we've built is that over the years, we've had so many people say to us that our office environment is the place in their life that they feel they need to wear a mask. And that to me is one of the greatest compliments I could possibly receive. I feel like a lot of people go through life wearing a mask and believing you have to be a certain person for other people and you have to behave a certain way in a work environment. And that kind of almost decenters yourself by default. You're not being authentic to yourself a good portion of your life, a good portion of your day. And I couldn't imagine that in some ways. So to have our team feel that way about things, to me, is super, super special. I'm very proud of that. And so I think they feel that they're safe here, that they can be open and honest and that we'll support them even in a difficult time. And we've historically, I don't do it anymore. We've historically used the word family around our business. And I know it carries a negative connotation these days, but as almost a mechanism of manipulation of people. And that was certainly never my intention. My thought was, I'm going to spend a lot of my waking life with these people. I should actually give a shit about them and not see them as a cog in a machine or a means to an end. I should treat them as human beings. So that's something I've always tried to index heavily on. And then I hope that my team feels, and I feel like based on some of the feedback that we've gotten over time, that there is a good, comfortable feeling generally among our team and with each other. And many of them have become great, great friends outside of work. That's another thing I love seeing, is people are intentionally going and connecting with each other outside of work in fairly large groups through no urging of ours. So maybe a bit of dumb luck, and hopefully like an underlying philosophy that people believe and know that I actually give a shit and it's not just words. And I'd like to think I'm approachable, although I think founders always think that they're approachable. And if you were to ask their team, they're probably less approachable, or they feel that they're less approachable than the founder would like to think that they are. But yeah, that's just as much as lifestyle design has been important to me and how I thought I would balance my life. I thought that it was something that was hard for most people to get in a typical job. And that if you could offer that to them, that that would be quite sticky and quite a differentiator and a bit of a cultural linchpin, I guess, maybe for lack of a better description. And I think that's been a bit of our secret sauce, although I hesitate to say secret sauce because it's not like it's a secret. It just seems like normal human being stuff to me. But
Drew, this is the first podcast where I've heard someone describe the office environment like that, where people felt like this is where they could take their mask off. And that is truly inspiring for someone who is growing a company right now. I mean, that's what I would want for our people as well. And I find we're very aligned in terms of lifestyle design as well, because for the last 20 odd years, 25 years, my wife and I have been traveling pretty consistently. And I agree with you. Like, for me, I've got my earbuds and my laptop and a power source and Wi-Fi, and I'm good to go. And my wife laughs. She's like, you can work anywhere. Like, I could work on a bus anywhere, right? So I try to provide that inspiration for our team as well and design their own life. And sometimes it's challenging because, like you said, you have to have those conversations with people around, listen, I think you need to take some time off. My business partner, Joe, he loves talking to people. And we were looking at the time I was taking off and Al was taking off and then what Joe was taking off. And he was barely taking any time off. And we brought it up to his attention. He said, yeah, but I love what I do. I love just talking to people. You still need time away from the business. I know you love it, but you still need and deserve time.
And I think sometimes, sorry to jump in, but I think sometimes like that distance is so important, because you write an essay in university and you spend hours on it and then you pass it over to your friend and they catch a spelling error in the first paragraph that you've looked at 50 times. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, when you're too close to something, it's a little bit hard to actually see the forest through the trees sometimes. And a really, really great sort of story that somebody told me one time that has always resonated with me, and I think kind of lends itself to perspective, and perspective is such an important thing in life, is there's a gentleman, he was outside his house, and he noticed every day his neighbor would come home and he would stand out front of his house and he would stand in front of a tree for about 5 minutes and he would stare at the tree before he would go into his house. And so he watched him consistently, and day in and day out, this gentleman would come home, stand in front of the tree, and he would go into the house after standing in front of the tree. So eventually he screwed up the courage and he went over to his neighbor and he said, listen, sorry to be a bit of a weirdo, but I noticed that every day you come home and you stand in front of this tree before you head into your house. And I was just wondering, what are you doing? And the guy said, oh, yeah, I'm totally fair. I'm glad you asked. So what I do when I come home and before I go into my family is I decide to hang my problems from the day on the tree. And then I come back out and I get them in the morning. And you know what the amazing thing is? There's less of them when I come back in the morning. And so to me, that was just like a big highlight of like how important it is to just kind of put these things aside and remove yourself from them in some capacity, because you get such greater clarity to this problem that you've been struggling with for so long. And so I think it's so fundamentally important to just kind of disconnect from everything for a bit to get that clear perspective. Because sometimes when you're in the midst of it, these things seem so, you make a mountain out of a molehill inadvertently. And sometimes when you step back, you go, oh shit, that's a molehill. What am I doing? And it becomes that much easier to navigate. So I feel like it's so important to keep that balance. And it's actually counterproductive to not, in my mind.
So when I spend 5 minutes tonight looking at the tree before I go in the house and my wife wonders what the heck is going on, I'm going to say, just call Drew. He'll fill you in. Right?
I'm a bit of a cheesy guy, but I think it's a kind of a beautiful like concept and story personally.
I love it. I love it. Drew, I want to pick your brain because, again, we're growing a company. We're always looking, you know, what are the things that we should be looking for? We've seen big evolution over the last couple of years or several decades, let's face it, in the talent space and talent attraction. What are some of the things that we can expect in the coming years? And what would your advice be to people like ourselves who are growing companies?
My lens is largely startups and scale-ups primarily for the last, you know, 15 plus years. So I guess I'm skewed and biased to that. And it's been a really interesting ride. There's some macro trends that maybe I can talk about as well. But one of the things I think that is kind of a macro trend right now that I think drives into your question a bit is, historically, and something that didn't really make sense to me ever, to be honest, and I always thought it was maybe because I was a pragmatic services business guy, but for the most part, the type of questions that people would ask startup founders were like, how much did you raise? How many employees do you have? Things that were in no way, shape, or form a measure of true business performance. It was more a phallus measuring contest almost in some ways than it was like an actual measure of the performance of the business that I always thought was a little bit strange in some ways. And I think what has happened with the economy in the last few years in the venture space has sort of forced people to be a lot more pragmatic about these things and start to figure out how I can get more from less. And I think the types of questions that are being asked of founders now are much more related to business performance. And now there's a lot more conversations around how few people can I build a $1 billion company with? And I feel like that is in some ways a macro trend that will affect talent acquisition. So I think it's important right now for businesses to figure out how can I do more with less? How can I make my business more efficient? And how can I be a responsible, pragmatic business owner with my capital, given the state of the economy? And I'm hoping that that will drive better outcomes in some ways, because of that lack of pragmatism. I wonder to some degree if that's not why we haven't had the world's greatest outcomes in Canada. So I think that's a macro trend that will be interesting, because I think there in some ways will be less volume of hiring. As ironic as this might seem, given what my business is, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, early days at Wave, that was a rocket ship, obviously. And I sat down with Kirk and James and said, I think we might be hiring too fast, which is a weird thing to say for the guy who's getting paid to help them hire. But I always felt like, you know, I wanted to realign the incentive structures. I wanted to do the right thing for the business. And I just could see that when you hire really quickly, you tend to make hiring mistakes. I mean, even if you don't hire quickly, anyone who's hired at scale and at significance has made a mistake. It's an art, not a science, at least at this point anyway. And so I think that's a trend that is happening, is people are being a little bit more intentional about their hiring, particularly right now. And I hope that's a trend that kind of continues, because I believe that if we're more responsible with that, then we'll drive better outcomes. And that's something that we really need in this economy. And I think maybe tying into another big macro trend that I'm personally super interested in is AI and automation and agentic technologies, I think have a massive, massive future. And within the talent acquisition space, but within many spaces, seeing a lot of organizations trying to figure out how to automate TA processes. And we've been playing in that space. And I think those two things tie together for me in an interesting way, because I think Canada has a massive opportunity in front of it right now to take advantage of this huge AI wave that we're in and to ride that wave. We are a global leader in research and innovation in artificial intelligence technologies. And we now have the opportunity to commercialize that and play a key role. And that can be a massive, massive lift for the entire country. And my hope is that if we can kind of combine that AI knowledge, expertise, that brain power that we have with a better pragmatism around how do you actually build a successful business and startup, that hopefully we can put those two things together really well and drive better outcomes for our country, because it's a huge, huge opportunity in front of us. And to me, it would be such a shame if we missed this wave, because we're positioned in a really great way to be a global leader in what happens in the next 10 years. And so it's ours to fumble or not. And I hope that we don't. And I hope those two things tie together nicely. And I've been down the AI rabbit hole we've been doing AI projects for years. And now it's generative AI rabbit hole, I suppose, more specifically, that we've been going down for the last couple of years. So we started about a year and a month ago or so building an agentic platform. We integrated OpenAI into our core system about a year and a half, a little bit more than that ago, and started automating certain workflows with that, but just on a prompt basis. So we could now save these prompts, call in candidate details, job details, company details, screening notes, things like that, in order to run these various sort of automations. And then I started getting interested in how can you connect these dots together. For anyone who maybe doesn't know, agentic technologies is effectively, you know, multi-agent systems and things like that, where you leverage these large language models and connect them into various APIs in order to push and pull data from systems of record. And you can automate entire workflows leveraging the intelligence of these large language models. And that became really, really interesting to me. And that's what we started building about a year and a half ago. We ended up taking a bit of a detour October of last year to build an AI career companion on top of this platform. And that ended up taking on a life of its own. And we ended up unlocking just shy of $750,000 of non-dilutive funding. We have a pilot project that's starting next month, just shy of 100K pilot project, and super, super excited about the impact of these technologies. I think right now in any industry, if you're not at least trying to leverage ChatGPT or figuring out where the puck is going in this regard, you're falling behind. And as a business owner, it'd be highly irresponsible to not be thinking about these things. And I think that they're going to have a huge impact on every business and every aspect of business. But I think talent acquisition is no exception. And in fact, I think right now, talent acquisition is, dare I say, leading the charge in some ways in some of these organizations. There's a lot of it being brought into the talent acquisition processes right now, I think, from what we're seeing. And that to me is a really exciting area that we're leaning in really heavily and trying to help our clients think through how do you make your organization more efficient? Because we've always wanted to be more than just like, we can provide you great talent. Yes, but we want to help you think through talent challenges on a more holistic, more macro scale than just filling individual jobs. And I think there's some incredible efficiencies that can be created. And there's still a lot of people who are trying to think about this and are quite sure what to do with it. And I think we can add some interesting value there. And that's super fun stuff for me to just think through these business processes and how can we optimize and where are the inefficiencies and those kinds of things, I think are a lot more fun. And that's the type of stuff that keeps this interesting to me. Because if it was just purely filling jobs for the last 20 years, I might have burnt out by now. But being able to think a little bit more macro about like, how do we solve talent challenges? Because I actually believe most challenges in business tie back to people in some way, shape, or form. It can be solved with people. And so I like thinking about what is the business challenge and how do we map that back to people and people processes and how do we optimize those? And that's what keeps it interesting and fun for me. And I think AI certainly and agentic technologies are going to have a massive, massive future. I think we will have in the next 3 months, maybe 2 months, a significant amount of our initial sourcing and outreach process fully automated if we want with the technology that we're building, which is exciting and interesting and fun to be playing with.
Drew, I think Josh, you had said it a little bit earlier. We could probably have a podcast for 5, 6, or 7 hours here because every time we ask you a question, you are dropping so many nuggets of gold in each answer. And I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, we could talk about this, this, and this, this. But again, I wanted to point out something as well. And Josh, I don't know if you feel it, but I certainly do. When I'm doing my weekly reviews, which I'll do tomorrow, and my monthly reviews, I look through my book and think, I'm doing quite a bit here. This is great. You know, I'm accomplishing a lot. And then I meet someone like Drew and just listen to your last answer and realize, oh, hold on a second. There are people operating at another level. And again, that's one of the great things about the podcast, where we get to create friendships and relationships with people that you can have these conversations. And I'm sure there are people listening to this that are getting motivated and inspired, thinking, oh, okay, there are people out there at another level and I can be at that level and maybe have these conversations with these people too. So fantastic answer.
You're very kind because I must admit, I feel like a pretty average human. So yeah, well, I appreciate the compliment and your humility.
We are going to come back to a related to trees as our signature question because I get to ask it today instead of Al. He usually gets the pleasure of doing that. But before we get to that, I know Josh has got some follow-up as well.
Like Robin said, I think we could do 5 different podcasts, 5 hours each on all of your passions. But I want to pull one word from what you said. And you talked about people and how it all comes back to people. I would love for the Success Leaves Clues audience to get a better sense of Drew as a person. So can you just walk us through, and this is a weird question, but what would be...
Let's go for it.
A perfect Tuesday for Drew. What would it look like?
That's a good question. And you know, it's funny, not to be overly semantic, but perfect is a funny word for me. I don't know that there is any such thing as perfect per se, I guess, in some ways. What would a perfect Tuesday look like for me? Yeah, I almost have to think about it because I wonder to myself, would it be working? I mean, perfect Tuesday might be like waking up, having a nice coffee with the wife, playing with the kids on the beach and stuff. But and listen, I love working, but there's just nothing like spending time with your family in an exotic destination for me in terms of like perfection and an optimal day and maybe going and seeing some cultural things and getting some nature in and spending time with my family in some ways would probably be my perfect day. But if we like, you know, take it back to what maybe like what a more normal day might look like, I'd get up about 7 o'clock in the morning or so, have some coffee with the wife and kids, take them to school. I try to take the kids to school every morning just to be there for that. And then I come home, probably have another coffee, chat with the wife for a little bit, do some yoga, go for a quick dip in the backyard, if assuming it's the summer. I love the summer. And I go for a quick dip in the backyard and just kind of hang out, check some emails for a little bit, so I just get my day started a little bit slowly and kind of ease in and spend some time with sort of like my family and myself. Typically go into the office around 9:30 or 10 so I can kind of miss traffic. I've usually will have had a call or been checking email and stuff anyways, but you kind of miss the traffic because especially nowadays, Toronto traffic is a disaster. And then I go in and do a couple hours of meetings with my team, try and see what we can do to unblock them, go for a lunch with somebody interesting, come back, spend the afternoon sort of trying to do a little bit of deep work. Maybe go to an event like a demo day or something in the evening. Actually, I mean, truth be told, probably my ideal would be to come home and have dinner with my family, actually, although there's a combination of like, it's either one of those two things. Either I'm at an event or I'm coming home and having dinner with the family. The latter being about 80% of the time, I try to index on that pretty heavily. Definitely part of the lifestyle design thing for me is being able to be a present father and a present husband. And so that's something that I like to do. And it's an interesting balance to strike because there is a lot of events and as sort of the leader of the company, I have historically gone to a lot of these. So I have to make some different choices. And I do enjoy being that I'm a people powered person. I do enjoy going to those events too. So it would be kind of one of those two things and put the kids down to bed, hang out with the wife, maybe have a glass of wine out in the backyard, and either go to maybe snuggle and watch a TV show and crash, or alternatively, that's probably the ideal, but another thing that happens reasonably frequently. So usually what I do is Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, I will do some later in the evening work because my days are a gong show. And so catching up on my email, which virtually never happens anyways, or trying to do deep work is often better in the evening when I'm not being disrupted. So 2 to 3 days a week, I'll do some work till pretty late in the evening. And then I make sure Wednesday is the wife and my night to just have dinner. I shut down and just 100% focus on her. And then same for the weekends. So I guess that's a broader answer than what a Tuesday looks like. But that's kind of like, I guess, typical day or what my ideal days look like generally.
Love it. Robin, take us home, my friend.
Well, here we go. And again, I don't get to ask this question that often. So Al is usually, and he asks it so well. So I will try to do it justice. But there's a saying that goes like this. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. Can you talk about any proverbial trees that you are planting?
I mean, I think the proverbial trees maybe that we're planting that right now, I'm not sure if I will sit in the shade of these trees, I guess, is around some of the AI technologies, I think. And also what we're trying to do is try to figure out what is the transition plan and how can we sort of build a strong business and potentially transition that. We've had a lot of people who've been with us for over a decade. We've probably close to half our team has been with us for over a decade. And so my inclination is to sort of try to figure out how to build a good, strong, sustainable business that we can transition over to some of the senior leaders in our organization over time. And some of the other things that we're also working on is like some global talent stuff. So these are things of seeds that we're planting for the core business. And I'm starting to have more and more of an interest in pursuing some of these other opportunities. So I'm kind of trying to set that business up for success and growth and to be able to transition that over to some of our senior team over the years is, I guess, maybe the answer. I don't know if those are necessarily trees that I totally won't sit in because some of the ASF, hopefully I will, but it's going to live a life well beyond me. But I think maybe more around the core business stuff is sort of how can I create a good sustainable business that I can transition over and maybe help advise, but sort of remove myself from the forest, I suppose, a little bit, but you know, try to help people with a little bit as things progress.
Well, we've asked that question at least 100 times. I think it was about episode 100 that Al introduced that and haven't been disappointed yet. And that streak continues. I think that's great. Josh, thanks so much for being an amazing co-host and an amazing friend. You're just a wonderful human being. And Drew, I feel the same way. Like, just so you know, we're friends now, just whether you like it or not. We're friends, just leveraging the relationship through Josh. So that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. Hope you did too. If you have any questions for Josh or myself, please feel free to give us a call or be joining the conversation on LinkedIn. As we've seen here today, success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.